Here we are, Motoring Millennials are back at you. Episode 3, Zach Rothberger, Anthony Lucci here. Woo. How we doing today, Luch?
Doing great. How you doing, Zach?
Great. Hey, we're talking cars. It can't be any better than that, right?
It's a great day.
That's right. So on today's episode, we will be talking about buying and selling your dream car, your restomod, your restoration car, or your hot rod of your choice, whether it's on eBay, Facebook, or whatever online avenue have you, or through word of mouth even. We're going to talk about what do we look for when we are looking to purchase the car that we would like to buy, different aspects and things that you should always look out for and be aware of before you pull the trigger on that purchase. And lastly, we will talk about car auctions, as that's another fun avenue to purchase your car of choice, whether it be at a Mecum, a Bear Jackson, or through your local car auction. So you ready to kick it off, Luch? What do you think?
Yeah, we have a lot of good topics to talk about today.
That's right.
So I guess starting it off with different online platforms, let's go back. Let's take a step back real quick to the newspaper.
Oh, I like that. Past. Yeah, or like Auto Trader. Auto Trader. Joe Dirt would do proof.
I don't know. You're familiar with Guthriesville. Bobby Ray's, there was they used to sell cheesesteaks. I would go in there with my mom almost every week. We would go to get a cheesesteak, right, when I was growing up. And they would have the free Auto Trader in there. And I would always take it home and page through it looking at, you know, cars to buy. And I was like 6 years old. but I mean, even before Auto Trader and stuff, I mean, if you were looking to sell a vehicle or purchase one, other than going down to a car dealership or a used car lot, you had to look in the newspaper. And that's how a lot of performance vehicles were traded back in the day.
Yeah. I never even thought about that one because I'm just so used to technology and being online and all that. So that's a phenomenal point.
Yeah, I mean, the beautiful thing about technology is it really has been the gateway for the car community with buying and selling parts that you need for your vehicle. I mean, think about some of the really rare cars that they only made a handful of, and you needed one specific part, and without the internet, you ain't finding that.
Yeah, everything's at the tips of our fingers now, for better or worse, whatever you want, however you want to take that.
Exactly.
It's
all about how you use it.
We're spoiled, to say the least. Our generation, we can afford to be lazy when looking for a car, needless to say. To that point, so obviously some of the popular online platforms that we know is eBay, Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist, and RacingJunk.com mm-hmm. for the drag racing community out there, and even collector community too. So from your experience, Anthony, have you found like a specific platform that has worked best for you or that you've been successful?
I guess I've always been a little leery of Craigslist.
Yeah.
Just because it always kind of has that cloud over
Craigslist
it.
Killer.
Yeah. So you have to be careful. But at the same time, I bought a vehicle from across the country off of Craigslist.
Yeah.
But the seller was a great guy. And, so I think, and I've also sold stuff on there as well. But again, then you just have to be careful. There is a lot of spam on there. Tell you a little trick of mine.
Oh, yeah.
There's a website called searchallofcraigslist.com. Okay. So if you're looking for like a specific vehicle or a specific part, and instead of just choosing one city, you can search whole nation pretty much.
Oh.
So that's my little trick and tip.
Wow,
for the day.
I like that. I never knew that. I'm going to take a note about that.
but I guess my favorite would probably have to, I mean, eBay has a lot of nice cars, but from a selection nowadays, it seems like Facebook Marketplace is really the place to be.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it really does, and it's so easy. I mean, all you need is a Facebook page, and you have access. You can set the radius to how far you want to look, whether it's, you know, nationally or in a 25-mile radius. It's definitely, I mean, we bought and sold numerous car parts off of there. We see a lot of great deals. I mean, I'm searching it every day, and I'm not even in the market for a car.
Is Facebook your favorite?
So I was really lucky and fortunate. It's funny, my dad actually found my Camaro on Craigslist, and it turned out to be a great deal, like how you mentioned with your situation. The guy was a GM mechanic, and he was a great guy. He lived about an hour away. We made a deal work. He was very flexible and willing to do the sale. So my one experience on Craigslist was great. I've tried to sell parts on Craigslist, and I kept getting spam emails. So besides that, I mean, Craigslist has always been positive for me. Facebook, though, like you said, it's just the ease of use, and it's so easy. And to that point, like, I sold my dad's Cobalt on there a year or two ago.
Yeah, I remember that.
In like 3 hours. Like, yep. It reaches
real fast.
Yeah, it reaches so many people. And the nice thing is you can access these people's profiles, and you can do your own version.
To see who they are.
You can do their little version of Facebook stalking if you want. Yeah. So that way you can do your
own. I mean, I think everyone does that.
Yeah, you can do your own little background check. Exactly. eBay, my dad has bought and sold a lot of cars on eBay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the nice thing with that is obviously you can set your reserve, so you can basically force it to be what you want it to be, your price, if it hits that and it's in your given auction time frame. And it's secure. Like, you operate through PayPal. Like, it's all monitored. It's extremely secure. So eBay is a great option.
I always feel like if you're buying a car off eBay, mm-hmm. You're paying a premium. Do you feel that? Or no? Like, do you feel like you're ever going to get a great deal on eBay?
Personally, probably not.
No. I don't feel like that's the place to get a deal. If you are looking for a deal, if you're like, okay, I have plenty of money to buy this vehicle, and I know what I'm going to pay, go buy it off eBay. And there are a lot of dealer listings on eBay as well. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And the risk you do take with eBay is, with it being auction based, you do risk like the seller having a friend bump up the deal for them.
I remember there've been a lot of auction wars.
Yeah, bid wars. So you risk that, and also like with your auction, that typically means that the car is states away. So you're buying a car sight unseen, you know, in a sense. So that's always a risk, no matter what platform, obviously.
Yeah.
Racing Junk is a great avenue for race cars, you know, purchasing dragsters or whatever, you know, door cars, motorcycles, etc. There's nothing but good things to say about Racing Junk. But so to that point, let's what do we look for? Or what do we look at in a car when we're looking to buy them, regardless of the avenue?
But I think it's always smart to get a pre-purchase inspection done, whether that's by a professional or look at the vehicle over yourself. If you feel that you are aware of all the things that could potentially be problems with the vehicle when you're purchasing it. Personally, number one thing I check for is rust.
Oh, yeah.
Engine noises. Mm. And, you know, I think another thing that gets overlooked a lot of the time is, like, tires.
Yeah.
People say they have brand new tires on the vehicle, and it's like they're dry rot. They might have a lot of tread left. I mean, you're buying a vehicle, and you might have to put $1,000 worth of tires on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so you gotta, don't overlook those little things. Oh, it just needs tires. Okay, yeah, but factor that into the price.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But what other things do you look for?
Yeah, no, rust is 100% number one, because most of your money is going to be spent on body work if you want to make it, you know, right and do the paint and all that, go that route. So some other things I look for, it would be, you know, number of owners the car has. Mm-hmm. Like, has this thing been passed around by 5-6 different people? You know, did each person handle it differently? One might have been, you know, a Sunday driver. The other one might have been thrashing and beating on every day of the week. You don't know. The thing for me is I would like, if I'm going to invest in a car, I would appreciate if it was garage kept, if not its whole life, most of its life, just because of it takes away that, you know, the environmental factors that could impact, you know, like you said, the paint. And just the general wear on the car. Obviously, for like a newer car, doing a Carfax search is extremely smart, in my opinion. And it's not expensive to do, and it gives you the whole rundown of its service history, if it was in any accidents, if the title is clean, etc. Probably one of my biggest things is, and you hit on this earlier about the inspection part, is do your research. Mm-hmm. Like, I was at an auction one time which we'll get into that later, but in this specific example, I was at an auction where this place advertised, it was a 70 Malibu. And we all know Malibus and Chevelles, they're like a brother sister type deal. Mm-hmm. And they advertised it as a Chevelle 454.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And we go to the auction and like they give you the VIN number to do the research, right? So this is the point of like we have information at our fingertips. So
were you bidding on the car?
No, I went with a friend. Yeah. And that was the point. Like you get the VIN number, do the research. What's the VIN number mean? Because that'll tell you everything you need to know. And if you did that little bit of research by you know, again, information at our fingertips, it tells you right there that it's a Malibu and it's not worth. Long story short, the guy bought it for like over 14 grand. And you know, yeah, for a Chevelle 454, that is a hell of a deal. For a Malibu, that's like two or three times overpaid, you know?
Right.
So,
and it wasn't like pristine.
No, it not at all. Not at all. It was not pristine. I mean, it wasn't bad looking. It was probably like a 10 footer, but
needed stuff.
It was one of those deals where like if you just did the research, you would know it's not worth that amount of money and you'd be smarter.
I've seen a lot of people like that where they post, you see on the Facebook groups for specific cars that, you know, they purchase a vehicle and then you just gotta shake your head and you almost feel bad for them. It's like, you got snowed on that deal.
yeah, you really did. And from the other perspective, as a seller, like the amount of times that I've seen ads where it's like there's misspellings and there's maybe one or two sentences of description and you post like one picture.
Yep.
Like you cannot expect to sell a car that by doing that.
Just the other day.
Yeah.
There was a parts car, well, they called it a derby car in Oxford, PA, that I found $600 Facebook Marketplace. So I asked the guy, I can literally show you the conversation. I asked the guy, hey, let me get, they had two pictures and they were blurry as hell.
Of course, yeah.
So I'm like, can you send me a couple more pictures, like just so I can see, like, is it worth my time coming down there?
Right.
Would not get me pictures. He's like, all he kept asking is, are you going to come see it? Like, I'm not going to come see it until you send me more pictures. Yeah. I mean, like,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly. And I got another story for you too with a seller that I dealt with. And then we're going to dive into an even better story was, I was looking at a 2002 Camaro and it was rolling. It was a freshly painted, it was mint basically. The guy wanted like $4,000 for it.
That's a deal.
It's a good deal, right? So
what's the catch?
Yeah, so the catch is the guy was a jerk off basically. So what happened was I was texting the guy. I told him we were arranging a time for myself and my dad to come down and look at it. He said, are you bringing a trailer? I mean, the guy lived 45 minutes away. So I was like, I said to him, I was like, no, I'd like to look at it first to determine if I'm actually going to buy it. I'm not just going to decide my decision on your pictures I have on Facebook. So he replied back, if you're not bringing a trailer, don't bother coming.
Fishy already.
Right. So if you're going to be like that, that's one way to easily scare off potential buyers.
Yeah.
And, you know, the funny thing is I tracked that car on Facebook Marketplace because I saved it. And I'm pretty sure it's still out there. And we're talking like a year ago.
I believe it.
A year ago is when he did that. Was when he said that. So just these are some lessons that the listeners you can learn.
Well, even just like the headers that I was going to buy the other the couple months ago. Typically worth what, $1,200, $1,000
maybe? Yeah.
$250 they were listed for. It's like, this is great.
Yeah.
The part number I needed, everything. The guy doesn't accept PayPal.
It's like, why?
It's 2020, man. You don't accept PayPal? Like,
yeah.
I've had a PayPal account since I feel like I was born.
Yeah, right. I feel like you come out of the womb and you have a PayPal account.
Exactly, right? So, I mean, like, it's the most secure form of payment.
Yeah.
Right now. I mean, everyone uses it.
Right.
So, I don't know. You feel like, do they really want to sell this?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it's like how eager are you?
Yeah.
Like, so what? You have to box it and ship it to me. Big deal. Do you want to make the sale? You make the sale.
Yeah.
And,
and that is also a good telltale sign. Like, you want to make sure you're buying a vehicle from someone who is you, I guess I'm going to say trust, but
yeah,
that you can, you know, they're not lying to you or they're being truthful and that, they're really, they're, you know, they're trying to pass the vehicle on to a good new home.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah, like they care. They're not just in it to make a buck or mislead you. Unfortunately, there are some sharks in the water out there that do that.
Yes.
But the majority of the group in the car community is all...
I think we know a few sharks.
We know a shark that might have you know, drowned, if you ask me. So I'm going to leave the story off from my perspective, then I'll let you kind of tail in. So we have...
Let me just adjust myself so I'm not
thinking. Do we have the blood pressure medicine out?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So Lucci and I were looking to buy, what year was it again?
I feel like it was like an 85.
It was like an 85 Mercedes something.
300D?
Yeah, it was diesel, six shift.
Yeah, it was a diesel five-speed wagon.
Yeah, it was cool looking.
I don't remember the number. I know it starts with like a W, the engine. But yeah, pretty rare car. And what attracted us was the five speed.
Yeah.
And I talked to my one buddy, Todd, who had a Mercedes diesel at that time. And I think the thing like had close to a million miles on it. Those things ran forever.
Yeah. This car specifically, I think, just needed a head gasket.
Needed a head gasket. Yeah. Allegedly.
Correct.
So, yeah, go ahead with the story.
So let's just, I'm just going to start the story off by saying I was at a wedding the night before, and I didn't get to sleep until about 4:30 in the morning.
Oof.
And we all know what happens at weddings. You drink a little bit. And we were supposed to leave at 7 a.m. to go a couple hours north from where we're located. And long story short, puking my brains out before. I'm already in like, it's hot. I mean, you know, it's already
one of those days. You were in rough shape, man.
Yeah, I was. I'm getting in rough shape just thinking about it. And
I remember you trying to eat a granola bar.
Yeah.
Getting into the car. Yeah. I was like, are you sure you want to drive?
It wasn't good, but I think this was like a sign of how the day was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
So we're towing the trailer up because we're thinking, you know, we made a deal with this guy. We already paid about half down for him to just hold it for us, and we were coming up to get it with the trailer like a week or two later.
And what did we pay? $600 for the car?
Maybe, yeah, I think it was like $600.
So it was a steal.
It was a steal. And the car value was what, like $5,000, $6,000?
Yeah, we were going to do some, just clean it up.
Yeah,
and
put a grand into it.
Yeah, put head gas, get it running, and boom, and flip it.
That was the point. And it was a cool looking car too. It was low. It was a sweet wagon, diesel, six shift. It's cool. It's rare. So we get, 30 minutes away? And also, part of the deal was the car was sitting in the grass, remember?
Yes.
And we asked him if he could just move it onto his driveway so that way, we could
get the trailer. Yeah,
it would be easy to load it, all that good stuff. That was, a part of the deal. So we're 30 minutes away from his house, and he calls us, and what does he say, Luke?
He said he wasn't going to be able to meet us. He wasn't going to be able to go do the title transfer because he had to go down to the river with his friends tubing.
Yeah.
Okay, man. Well, we just drove 2 hours.
Yeah.
With a trailer.
With a trailer. Yeah.
Which might not be a lot for some people.
Right.
I know people go cross country, but.
Yeah, we don't tow trailers every day.
We don't do that. We don't do this every day.
Yeah.
And we rented the trailer too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not coming back up another 2 hours to transfer the title another day. I wanted to get it done all one day.
Yeah.
And you're going tubing with your friends.
Like, what's more important to you, right? Like paying for your mortgage, which was his issue.
Yeah.
Or
couldn't pay his bills. That's why he was selling the car.
Yeah, and like you said about how he wouldn't meet us for the title, like, word of advice, do not go to buy a car and pick it up and leave with it without doing the title work
ahead of
time, because like this guy could have easily like sued us and said we stole his car.
Yep.
Like, you know, there was no proof of anything. So continue.
Yeah, so we get there and we're like, all right, well, let's at least take the car because we paid half the money already.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave us the okay to take the car.
Yeah.
So we finally get the trailer into the driveway when the car is still on the grass and pop it into neutral, take the e-brake off.
Yeah.
And it was actually on a hill.
It was on a hill.
I thought, all right, car's going to roll. That car didn't sink into the ground, but those brakes were so frozen.
Yeah, that they wouldn't move.
I think they were frozen since the Ice Age.
Yeah, and we're pretty strong guys, I'd say. And we both could not move.
I didn't even care at one point.
Yeah.
If we were both pushing and it went down into the road and crashed into the telephone pole.
Yeah, me neither.
But it would not move.
No. It was just, he didn't hold up his end of the deal and leaving a car in grass under a tree where it gets, you know, the moisture.
No wonder he didn't move it.
No wonder why, yeah, exactly. There's a reason why he didn't move it. So,
long story short, we had to contact our bank and everything to get our funds partially back.
And to the point of talking about PayPal earlier, that's what we went through. And thankfully, with how secure PayPal is, we were able to be, you know, refunded, what, like 90% of what we had paid over. So it ended up, you know, we lost a little bit of money, but it wasn't enough to really be crippling. Very frustrating, but long story short,
we learned our lesson
and always make sure you're getting it from a person who seems reliable.
And if a deal most of the time, mm-hmm. if a deal is too good to be true, there's a reason.
Yeah, there's always a reason. Like if you see a car that you want that looks pristine and it's online for $5,000, yeah, it's a scam.
A lot of scams out there. A lot of scams. And then people who want to buy something, have you send it overseas, and then you have to pay this person and transfer and wire the money here. Don't do any of that.
Yeah, no, it's
it should be easy. The transaction should be easy.
Yeah, if your gut is telling you that something funny is going on, then something funny is going on.
Let me ask you a quick question, Zach. What do you think? Real quick, let's talk about low mileage cars versus high mileage cars. Would you buy one over the other? And I'm talking about like a car with like 2,000 miles on it. And that's I'm not talking a brand new vehicle.
Yeah,
that's certified pre-owned. Talking an older vehicle over 20 years old probably, or much older. That's literally has 5,000 miles from the factory.
Yeah,
or one that has 150,000 miles on it.
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, the issue with getting the low mileage car is obviously the price is going to be through the roof for one. But for two, it's like if you have a car with that low miles, how reliable is your car going to function if it's sat most of its life? Like, you know, you need fluids to be run through the thing. You need it to be exercised. Like as a human, you need to have exercise. So it's like
cars are the same way.
It's the same way.
You let a car sit and that is the death of it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Even if it's in a bubble and the paint looks immaculate and everything, mechanically, that car needs to be gone through probably more than a car that been driven a lot, right?
Yeah, exactly. That would be like a chain smoker at someone the age of 21 who you look good, but your lungs are all black inside. It's the same concept. But if the $150,000 car, it comes down to paint for me at that point is how beat is the paint, you know? But absolutely, I would not. I mean, the 2,000-mile car is cool from a collector's perspective, but are you going to drive it?
Right.
Probably not. Because you're going to get it. Perfect. You're going to get it, and you're going to be like, oh, well, it only has 2,000 miles. I don't know if I should really drive it. Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, then you just bought.
Although I'd love to buy a car like that and drive the hell out of it just to piss people off.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But the point of that's a great point, is, you know, you need to make sure you exercise your cars.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just have it sit. An extended period of time. Like, it's nice to, you know, have a car that you only drive in certain weather, but it's also important to at least start it up and get the fluids run through it, change the oil, you know, whatever. That's a great point for sure.
So
we've touched on some of the online avenues you could take, briefly touched on the auctions, but let's dive more into the actual auctions perspective. We've both been to Mecum before.
Yep.
We've seen Barrett Jackson. Have you been to Barrett Jackson?
Never been to a live Barrett Jackson. I love Mecum.
Oh, yeah.
I just think it's a great... I don't know if they're... attendance policies are right now with COVID and everything.
Yeah.
But, in previous years when we've gone there... It's such an embodiment of the car community, and there's such a variety of vehicles there. And the nice thing is they're not all perfect. Some of them are, You know, so there's really, and there are some really good deals there. I mean, when they do the shows where there's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, those first few days, there are some great deals that you can get.
Yeah. And what I like, I really like about Mecum is it seems like that's one like the working man can afford, right?
Right.
Whereas like at Barrett-Jackson, it's like you got all these executives or celebrities and it's like they're like triple digits and it's like, or six figures. I mean, it's like, how the heck, how do you compete with that? You know, you can't.
No, it's, you know, for the average car guy, it's not realistic.
No.
It's like, you know, I don't know. It's like, yeah, it's great to see a Ferrari just sold for $25 million.
Yeah.
Okay, like, I'm probably never going to buy a car like that.
Yeah, I can't even sniff a fraction of that. Like,
right.
You know, so, and to that point, so let's dive into some of the trends we've seen in some auctions where you see, like, obviously the resto mods are becoming very popular, and we're starting to see that they're even overvaluing the restorations or the all original cars. So you got the resto mods, you got the restoration cards, and even like the hot rod cars you'll see at auctions where more like the ones that are kind of say it's a Chevy Nova that was a straight six, and now it has, you know, a 427 in it, like those type of cars. Like we said, the resto mods are starting to overvalue a lot of these other ones. Like, what to you is most appealing?
So original versus like a resto mod.
Yeah, and I'll say this about the hot rods. I feel like the hot rod group, like where you have a bigger engine, a car that never really came with it, or you do a lot of other modification. I feel like that group gets a bad rep because people view them at auctions and they think it's chopped up and it's beat.
Right.
But in reality, it could not be. Like, there's a lot of race cars out there that are built like a show car.
Right.
You know, I just want to get that disclaimer out there before we dive in.
Yeah, I think it depends on the car specifically, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure that, you know, you might see one car that is like, wow, you know, they shoved this engine in here and it just works perfectly. But then there's other cars where it's like, nah, you know what, why they do that? Why they put this in here? Or why they put these seats in here from a modern car? Sometimes I think a lot of it comes down to personal preference.
Yeah.
But really it's there. You can, I think as you are around automobiles more, you start to develop an eye, and it might be your own preference for what is done really nicely and then kind of what is just kind of thrown together to maybe emulate something else. But I guess personally, I guess it depends on the vehicle, but I always think like it's kind of nice to have a mixture of both. You know, whether that's, you know, you have your original cars and then you have like, here's what the car could have been. I mean, like the old muscle cars that have modern day power plants, like, I mean, they're great. I mean, it's like, yeah, you can drive them all the time, but for me personally, like I do, you know, I like original cars, but that have, factory, or time correct performance parts added to them. So like you might have like from the '60s, like you might have, a car that has an Edelbrock intake and the finned valve covers on it. You know, like, to me, that's cool. It has like the, what do they call it? The day two modifications.
Exactly.
You know, but it's like, okay, this is how it would have really been back then. So, I mean, that's personally like kind of what I'm drawn towards. How about you?
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you're saying. I really respect I respect all three avenues, the hot rod, restoration, or resto-mod. You know, there's a lot to love about each one. It's like I said, I keep referring, it's an art form in my opinion. So I appreciate getting your car. Then, you know, you tinker with it to make it your own, whether from a performance perspective or appearance perspective. I appreciate the guys who go out of their way to make sure like there's certain stripes on the car to make sure it emulates how it looked back in the '60s or the '50s or seventies for the restoration group. And the rest of my group, I think is cool because you have an older car. For the rest of my group, what I appreciate would be, you know, obviously it looks stock from the outside. The interior is mint, looks either stock or slightly customized. And then you look under the hood and you see an LS engine. Like, I think that's cool. So I appreciate all three, kind of what you were saying as well. I think from a generational perspective, we're seeing the rest of mods start to really go through the roof, because a lot of the baby boomer generation and the generation prior to that, obviously they're getting older, right? So they don't want a car they're gonna have to work on every day. They're gonna want something reliable. Yeah, they're gonna want something reliable, trustworthy, they can just start. And there's a lot of small block and big block packages that work perfectly fine too, but I mean the LS or the Coyote group, or they're pretty stout. I also think that our generation, some people our generation, unfortunately don't know how to start a car that has a carburetor. So
probably not.
So again, that's another thing, chalk it up to resto mods,
It's like, what's a choke?
Right. Exactly. It's like what's the gas pedal, Jeez. So I think it's interesting. I just think from really pushing the resto mods is the generational aspect of it. I don't really think it's like a favoritism. I think it's just the generations and the times.
Yeah.
For better or worse, really. I don't think the art form of restoring a car is gonna go out of the window, but I just think you're gonna see the resto mods continue to rise, like we've already seen, like at Barrett Jackson and Mecum.
I gotta say one thing that obviously paint and bodywork costs so much money. In a full restoration, you can do a lot of mechanical work yourself, but really bodywork is truly, you really have to know what you're doing. Or else it can come, and it's all in the prep work. Mm-hmm. It's all in making sure everything is done right, and there's techniques to it. You just can't throw a piece of sheet metal over one that has from a hole that panel that had a hole in it. So one of the things I've always kind of embraced, and even some of my cars, they don't have nowhere near perfect paint on them, but like, hey, they run, they drive good. I can go out and enjoy it. I don't have to worry about getting the paint, scratching the paint or anything like that. And some of the, or even the cars that are out there that they do have the original paint on them, and like they have rust spots here or there, it's like, well, hey, it's only the original once. It's great to have some of these cars that are concourse restored, concourse restorations, and are absolutely perfect the way they would have rolled out off the showroom floor. But you don't need every single one like that.
Right.
It's nice to kind of have a mixture of them, and that way you might be able to get like your dream car that needs some work. Mm-hmm. But it's not perfect, but hey, maybe one day it will be.
Yeah.
And you can find that at some of these auctions.
Absolutely. Yeah. The auctions and even the avenues we mentioned earlier, eBay, Facebook, Craigslist, Racing Junk. I'm sure we probably missed some other avenue, but those being the primary one.
And I always say the one other thing don't do this while you're driving, or try not to, but if you're the passenger in a car and you're going by through neighborhoods, there are stool cars out there to be discovered that are sitting in backyards. A lot of them are hidden in garages you don't even know about. But sometimes you never know. You might see the headlight of a special car peeking out under a cover.
That's right. Just waiting for the right owner.
Yep, exactly.
You see that, or you see a car under a cover where you can recognize what it is, and you swing in the driveway and just say, hey, is this for sale?
Just make sure you have your mask on.
That's right. Yeah, please wear a mask. God forbid. that's been great. I think we really hit on all the topics about, buying and selling cars and the auctions and some of the trends we're seeing with, what's popular and, kind of the trends we're seeing for future years to come and generations. Thanks for tuning in to our third episode. Please remember, give us a follow and check us out on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. And hey, this is the third episode, so I think it's about time you hit the subscribe button on our podcast. So how about we do that and help each other out here? Thanks again for listening, everyone.